Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the early morning Sunday show. It's our last slot for this morning, and we usually have a Mufti Muhammad Hafiji from the Economics and Finance Desk of the Jumaatul Ulama South Africa, who presents the Conscious Consumer with myself. He is away today, but he has been kind enough to record the responses to the questions and topics that we had planned. So, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to Mufti.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Afanisa, and all the listeners of Radio Islam International.
See, now that's the beauty of technology. We're able to have him without having him at the same time. So alhamdulillah, we're talking on one of the subjects, which is many consumers fail to view lifestyle traps as a form of colonization. It wasn't making any sense to me, because first of all, I wanted to find out what a lifestyle trap was. So I let Mufti answer that question for us.
But before I respond to how lifestyle trap is a form of colonization, let me just give a brief introduction to the kind of damage that lavish lifestyle can do to the life of an individual. A presentation was recently conducted by Credit Bureau TransUnion on a new service called the Lifestyle Assessment Service. The Lifestyle Assessment Service is basically a service that TransUnion offers its corporate and government clients that helps them root out fraud and corruption in their respective organizations. Now, this fact is really staggering, that according to TransUnion, 77% of South African organizations have experienced economic crime. That is 28% higher than the global average. Now, what is particularly concerning is an increase in senior management being implicated as the source of fraud since 2016. Now, this is not about putting food on the table, but rather trying to keep up an unaffordable lifestyle, which is what you ask about here. Now, in many cases, the reasons for senior managers crossing the line was because they could not make the tough choices of selling their luxury cars or downsizing their homes or even taking their children out of private schools. Keep in mind that increases in private school fees have well outstripped salary increases, and many parents are struggling to keep their children in the school of their choice. At the same time, they may be trapped in unaffordable car finance schemes, or simply, I would say, unwilling to admit to friends that they cannot keep up their lifestyles. That's just by way of introduction in terms of what TransUnion is offering in as far as the lifestyle assessment service is concerned. But to come to your question at the outset, in terms of defining a lifestyle trap as a form of colonization, keep in mind, when it comes to lifestyle itself, many ordinary consumers do not see a lavish lifestyle as a form of colonization. And just as we despise colonization in its conventional definition, we tend to overlook lifestyle as a form of colonization itself. And what I'm referring to here is how our consciousness is colonized in a way to make us think and behave in a very specific way. So we focus on blind accumulation of more on the assumption that this will somehow make us happier. So once we become addicted to the external self-worth, it becomes harder to make the necessary adjustments to our life when the economy or our personal circumstances change. So this usually leads us to taking on more credit than we can afford. Once you have creditors on your back, one starts to feel even more desperate. It becomes even more difficult to tell or convey to your own kids that they must change their school, or by declaring yourself that you're over indebted, or getting help is even harder for most people. You know, so the thing is, we become more vulnerable to taking shortcuts or making unethical decisions. And once you have taken a bribe or done something that will get you in trouble, you no longer sleep well. Your stress levels increase, and you live in fear of being caught. So all this is simply because we overvalue the people's opinions over our own selves. And this is what I'm referring to when I talk about colonization as a lifestyle trap as a form of colonization, because you tend to value what others think of yourself rather than what you value as an individual. So rather than admitting that you can no longer stay on the spending trajectory that you were on, many take on more credit or worse, become vulnerable to opportunities of committing fraud, and they always believe that things will come right soon, business will recover, and I'll be able to settle all these loans and so forth, you know. So many of us believe that our self-worth is tied up to the objects we own. This is a real unfortunate part of our community. We believe that our worth is tied up to the objects we own in the form of clothes we wear or restaurants or eat-outs that we are seen at. And with that kind of mindset, we are likely to get caught in the lifestyle trap, which I refer to as a form of economic colonization that many, many consumers are subjected to. I think for me, what matters more is the issue of not only talking about how lifestyle trap is a form of colonization, but also providing how people can avoid the lifestyle trap. And for purposes of this morning, my intention is just to provide, I would say, about three or four basic points that one can keep in mind to avoid lifestyle trap. The first one is that before signing up your children to a private school, do the basic sums with 10% annual fee increases and increasing fees as your child moves up in the grades. What you will pay in 5 years' time can be very different to what you can afford right now. So one's got to be very honest and ask himself or herself, can I afford this? Have you been saving towards it, you know, to afford that same fee in 5 years' time, which is going to be escalated as your child goes higher in grade? If not, then it is extremely important for one to find other ways to supplement that child's education. So that's the first point. The second point is not to sign up for car repayments that will put pressure on one's finances. And certainly, as I said before, a finance arrangement which involves a residual or balloon payment that will keep you locked into finance forever. Because, as I said earlier on in earlier shows and programs, where we talked about balloon payments being such that you pay off your first form of you almost perceive you reach the end of your agreement until you realize that the balloon payment is also something that needs to be settled and needs to be refinanced again. So you tie it down for another 18 months to or even more. So that's the second thing. The third thing is, and this is crucial, really, it's not only to the high net worth individuals. Clothing is one thing never to ever purchase on a credit card. If a person cannot afford clothing, never ever do it on a credit card. It is always better to put money away and purchase clothing with cash. The moment a person begins to purchase clothing items with a credit card as a result of not being able to afford it, then this is of concern. Yes, if a person uses a credit card as a mechanism to save fees, you know, where you swipe on a credit card but you settle it immediately or using a debit card or whatever it is, that's a different matter altogether. But I think for me, what I want to leave our listeners with in terms of the topic of avoiding a lifestyle trap and viewing it as a form of consumerism is the point about this very important book written by Andrew Bradley. He wrote this book called How Much Is Enough? And in this book, he argues that while wealth has risen exponentially in the last 50 years, happiness levels have not changed. This is of concern, and the core message of the book is so important. The book, again, I'll just repeat, the title of the book is How Much Is Enough? And the author is Andrew Bradley.
Well, that's Mufti talking about this book that I think, you know, is relevant, but also the fact that, you know, we live beyond our means. No matter how wealthy we may be or how, you know, less wealthy we are, we do tend to the more. Every time you have more money, you tend to want more, and therefore we spend more. And that, of course, is the problem that many of us seem to have with regards to being consumers, and also when it comes to saving and keeping ourselves within a budget. But let's also look at the other topic that we discussed, and that was a new app for consumers to efficiently recycle waste. Now, this is pretty interesting to listen to. Take a listen.
Yes, Safa, there is a new app which contributes to efficient waste recycling. A fast-growing app-based service called Waste Recycling App. So it's abbreviated as RAP, W-R-A-P. RFPP, Waste Recycling App. It's basically an acronym for the full word, Waste Recycling App. This particular application is bringing convenience and simplicity to businesses and professionals who need waste removed from work sites. National rollout of the application is planned for the end of this year, with the service currently being available to more than 700 clients across Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Durban. Interestingly, the app brings together independent truck owners and customers who need waste removed through an easy-to-use mobile application, as with many other app-based services on our mobile phones these days. Now, the interesting thing is that the app enables the easy ordering and tracking of waste recycling services, similar to the likes of app-based ride sharing or taxi services and even food delivery services. The founder of the application is Clive Emsel, and he explains that the rationale is to basically spare customers the hassle of having to sort out waste while simultaneously creating work for truck owners in an environmentally conscious way. So it's really amazing to see how people, you know, we've seen services, people identifying the niche of providing taxis and ride-sharing services. We saw people identifying the niche of food delivery services. And here we find someone finding and capitalizing on the niche of rubbish and waste disposal. It's sad to say that we're living in an environment where in South Africa, in most suburbs, we have to be concerned about our bins. And here's a new app that offers some kind of services in terms of protection, as well as making sure that your waste is disposed of in an environmentally friendly way, as well as supporting truck owners who are able to manage waste products from our day-to-day lives. Now, apart from saving customers time, the app also creates work opportunities. That's what's interesting for me. All service providers are vetted and approved by the application developers, and their vehicles are subject to quarterly checks to ensure roadworthiness, something which is sorely lacking in many of the state-owned services that we find around us today. Service providers' compliance with national waste regulations are also checked regularly. I found it very interesting that service providers move most types of recyclables and solid waste using skip bins, roll-on, roll-off bins, tipper trucks that many of us are familiar with that come with their own loading staff. So some also handle sand and stone delivery, which is interesting for those who are doing some kind of construction and so forth. The app allows a customer to choose the waste type, the truck type that you need, pick up time for loads from between like your different tons and so forth, and they also quote you on the removal received within 60 seconds, which is the amazing part about technology and its ability to provide services in a seamless way. So a payment probably is obviously in place here. You one would have to pay. It's not a free service. Your payment for services happens after delivery, either through a credit card payment gateway on the application or through EFT, which many of us are familiar with, and it's also quite efficient to enable for accessing services. You can live track your waste disposal, and hence there's no need to follow up on the status of the order with calls or texts and so forth. I'm just assuming that someone is really that keen to ensure that after you dispose waste, you're willing to track where it goes. But additionally, the cloud-based dashboard gives customers access to a full audit trail with timestamps of every load's life cycle from removal to disposal, and also features useful graphic breakdowns of the data. This is one application that I find really interesting, and for many users would probably be a lifesaver for those who are confined to time and need the waste disposed at a very specific time to meet your own personal deadlines. The app, once again, just to wrap up, is called WRAP, WRAPP, and it is available on both Android as well as iOS devices. What the last thing I just want to end off is sign up for the services is done under 90 seconds, which again is something interesting in terms of the penetration of technology in our lives.
Well, isn't that something amazing? Because people find ways, they become very innovative and really creative to find ways to sustain themselves. And this is one of those apps and services that's being offered to us that can be used and I think would be a boon to many people, especially in the times that we're living in. Like here in Durban, I know waste not being fetched or not being collected is a huge problem, and I'm sure that there's other parts of South Africa that go through the same thing with our municipalities not being able to provide that service on a consistent and ongoing basis for us. Well, let's take a break, and inshallah, when we come back, I'll give you the last topic for our conscious consumer slot for today. And it's an interesting one as one because it deals with children and the issues of saving money or lessons that they should learn. Assalamu alaikum and welcome back to the Early Morning Sunday Show. We are at the slot Conscious Consumer, which we usually have with Mufti Mohammed Hafiji from the Economics and Finance Desk of the Jamaat al-Ulama South Africa. He is away this morning, so we've managed to get him very nicely to record his answers to the topics, and inshallah we'll play you the final one today. And this topic is, enough can never be said about conveying money lessons to children. And I think this is extremely important because children need to learn better than we have with regards to money so that they can have a better life, better ways of budgeting and understanding money better than we have in our lifetimes, inshallah, especially with the way the world is changing. So let's listen to what Mufti has to say about this.
Yes, but one, you know, I'm sure you'll agree with me on this. One of the most valuable gifts that you can pass on to your children is teaching them to handle money wisely. It definitely helps to establish sound values and gives them a sense of confidence and also control around a subject that's often fraught with emotion and worry as we grow older. Now, from a very early age, children can start learning about the value of money, things like basic budgeting, saving towards a goal rather than blowing all their pocket money on the latest trend. It's particularly valuable given the peer pressure and personalized advertising on social media that you find prevalent in the world today and in terms of what children are exposed to. This personalized advertising that our kids are exposed to is really of concern and something that many, many parents don't have control over. But for purposes of our slot this morning on the conscious consumer, I suppose we just confine that exposure of our kids to the financial aspect and the monetary aspect of things. Now, there are some lessons that we as adults should be passing on to our children, and there are many, and probably our listeners can call in to give us some of their tips of what they encounter as things that have worked in terms of imparting money lessons to children. I'm just going on to a few here. My first one for this morning is to try to impart to our children the ability to differentiate between needs and wants. Now, an early lesson is helping children to differentiate between what they like to have and what they really need. We've all seen that the behavior of kids at checkout tills in supermarkets with kids demanding sweets and then other goodies laid out to tempt them. But rather than say that you're not buying something because we can't afford it, they don't understand the statement of not being able to afford it. Rather explain that you're choosing to spend your hard-earned money in another way. For example, one could say that we're saving so that we can go somewhere maybe on the weekend, or we're saving so that we can go somewhere on the holiday. So rather find a way to communicate the need to save in a way that they can relate to it. So that's one aspect, and I'm sure many psychologists and experts who work with children would agree with that sentiment in terms of conveying a lesson of money. That's the first one. The second one is to convey or try to convey an understanding of the value of money. So this can be achieved by using coins, notes, sometimes calculators if you really have to, although using a calculator at a very early ages is not advised. But using these coins, notes, calculators in games is a good way to teach lessons of basic addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. There are many suitable board games, or you can even make up your own kind of technique to convey the importance or the value of money. You can show them colorful, maybe say example, what tends to work a lot is like you show them these deals of the week, the ad flyers, ask them to help you compare prices in the supermarket. That comparison exercise goes a long way in terms of imparting to children the value of money. Not that from an Islamic perspective we understand what money is, but we also find it in the words of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is reported to have said something to the effect that a time will come when the only thing that will matter is money. And undoubtedly money is a means towards achieving our aims and objectives, and therefore the need to impart the lesson of the value of money to our children. The third one I want to share with our listeners today is to try to impart to our children the importance of handling money well. This is very different to the first to the aspect of valuing money, because if you think about it, pocket money is an important step in teaching children financial responsibility, because initially if you give a child pocket money once a week, it gets blown within a day or two. As they get older, what you can do is maybe give the money once in a fortnight or once in a month, and this will teach them to make the money last. And in the process, they will be acquiring the skill of being able to handle money well. So that's what I mean when I say handle money well. And this is one example of the pocket money, maybe from a weekly basis to a fortnightly to a monthly, so that they tend to learn and embrace the whole idea of handling money better. The all-important part about learning to save has never been, we can never say we've talked about it enough. One can encourage younger children to put away some of their pocket money as they get older, maybe even open a bank account and suggest that they try to save some pocket money and any additional income they receive, like maybe on an odd occasion they receive some money or maybe for some carrying out some part-time job, maybe washing a car. Rather teach them to save some of that money, if not spend not spending everything. If they want to buy something, maybe a big ticket item which is a bit more expensive, then explain how they will need to save for it, maybe possibly sacrificing other want-to-haves and so forth. One could match the money to earn or save, or teach them how to manage debt by paying off that big ticket item in installments. So all these small basic exercises tend to teach children the importance of saving and keeping a bit, setting aside. And the last thing I want to say for this morning is the aspect of keeping records. No matter how meager a sum may be in terms of giving a child spending money, it is important just keeping a record of even that meager sum will go a long way in teaching a child how important it is to keep records of money. It's important to help children to keep track of income and even their spending in a book or in some spreadsheet. When you pay pocket money, look at the previous month, explain what they did well, what they could have spent on, where they could have saved. Those important lessons will go a long way in terms of holding a child in better stead later on in their lives, in terms of record keeping, analysis of the past, planning for the future. That record keeping, as I said earlier on, no matter how meager the sum may be, it will go a long way, even if there's a small notebook in which notes are kept and dates and some basic analysis from period to period. This will go a long way in terms of teaching children money. So just to quickly recap, I talked of a few things. Number one is the aspect of deciding between needs and wants for children, imparting the understanding of the value of money, and they are referred to the aspect of comparing prices in a supermarket or what's on the tabloid newspapers being advertised. Then we talked about handling money well by trying to get them to handle money for a longer period of time, and then the aspect of learning to save, starting off with a small box maybe or tin, and then eventually moving into a bank account and so forth. And lastly, the important aspect of keeping a record of finances. I hope these will be handy tips for one and all parents and even youth who may be listening at this point in time.